Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Simon Whistler Show with Sam Myers.
Hello.
What's going on, man? Plug your Twitter.
My Twitter
is at this is Sam Myers, M-E-Y-E-R-S.
Oh, even you've got it now.
Yeah, like there that. We go. I'm at Simon Whistler. You can hit us up on Twitter and let us know how we are doing. This is the show where we... I feel like I came up with a tagline for this, something to do with curiosity, and then I forgot what it was.
Fun with facts.
Well, that was what I came up with originally, and then I realized it was a bit shit, so I came up with something better,
and I forgot it. Where we cuckold with curiosity.
Let's just... leave us a review. Say hi on iTunes. If you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe. Check out the highlights channel if you're not already. If you just want less introduction and things between the stories, and just the stories themselves... check out the highlights channel. That's linked to you below. Only if you're watching via video, obviously. If you're listening via podcast, it's not going to work. Let's get into the first story.
Right now.
Jury duty. Judges. Judge being a juror in his own case.
Never done it. Have you done it?
I've never become a judge, so I definitely haven't done it. Let's talk about the story, and then I want to talk about jury duty, because I got some story. I don't have any stories, but... I have thoughts on jury duty. So, this was from the BBC. And when I saw this, I was like, surely this is American. This sounds like such an American story that a judge gets called for jury duty in his own case. Also because jury duty is way more often in the US because they have like jury trials for everything.
Yeah.
And corporate jury trials. Civil law jury trials.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, if you're like a company and you do something wrong and someone sues you or you get sued or whatever, you know, civil case, not a criminal case, you'll have a jury, which I always found real strange.
That's ridiculous.
It does
surely
seem a little bit excessive.
Surely you need an expert. Like, I've always thought that. Like, when you get a jury, they're not an expert on the case. So, it basically is asking an opinion of people that don't know anything about what they're talking about. And like, the world is... too full of opinions. Like get an expert, tell him this is right, this is wrong.
Yeah.
Bada boom, bada bing.
Easy.
Guilty.
And also juries go off on some crazy things where they're like, do you remember that Vioxx case? It was a drug that gave people strokes or something ages ago. I can't remember who it was by. But basically, I think it was Vioxx. And I remember because I had a Vioxx alarm clock. Because my dad is a doctor and, you know, you get all these like free shit from drug companies. And I held onto this Vioxx alarm clock for so long because... I found it, you know, morbidly amusing that this drug that killed people, and then the drug company got sued. A woman's husband died. They sued the drug company, and it was a jury case. They awarded $1 million in like, this is how much he would have made over the rest of his life. So we're making you whole. And then they awarded, it was like $150 million in plaintiff damages, which is where they give the damages to punish the company. Those go to the woman.
Wow.
And it's probably about a third goes to a lawyer.
I bet. Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you want to win that case.
I haven't read about that in 10 years, so the details are probably wrong, but it was something like that, and it was absurd. And I'm like, why is that going to her?
You go like, this is the one situation that I don't mind too much if my husband has died.
That's dark. I definitely wouldn't.
No, I'm joking. Of course I'm joking.
Good. Okay, so this judge, he gets called up for jury duty on his own case. And so he phones up the jury summoning board, which apparently is a thing. And he's like, sorry, he doesn't phone them up. He sends them a letter or whatever. And he says, I can't do this. And they're like, yeah, you can. That's not a good excuse. And I'm like, this is bureaucracy at its finest. Like, what did they expect him to do? And he's like, I am the judge on the case. I cannot be in the jury. It doesn't work like that. Is he going to just run from, like, the bench to the jury box, just back and forward? Like, what's going to...
Objection!
Yes. How is that? How exactly is that going to work? I just felt this was bureaucracy at its finest. He ends up phoning them up and being like, I'm a judge. This is my case.
Yeah, I rule this joint.
Apparently, judges can be called up for jury duty.
Well, I believe it, but in a different case, not their own
case.
Yeah,
exactly. It can't be in the OE.
As you say, that's madness that they're running between the jury and the podium and sort of like they rule that roost. Yeah. There needs to be someone at the top to order the jury.
So this was just in the news today, and I thought it was quite amusing.
Was this now?
I don't know. It was really super recently.
Yeah, okay, April.
Okay. I don't know how I came across this then. I swear it was like on BBC News. Maybe it was, you know, sometimes you'll see like trending articles from the past or whatever on BBC.
Yeah.
I thought this was interesting. But what I really wanted to do is lead into a discussion about jury duty.
Uh-huh.
Super interesting. I've never done it. You said you've never done it.
Never done it.
Ever known anyone who's done it? Your parents have done it? Family? Apparently there's a 1 in 3 chance of being called up in your lifetime. And I'm like, that seems insanely high, because I can only think of one friend of mine whose dad had to do it and then ended up getting out of it.
I do know people that have had to do it, but I think it was abroad, and I think it's in a place where everyone has to do jury duty.
Where?
I can't think where it is. Is it Australia? I want to say it's probably Australia, because Australia are really kind of big on things like this. Like, you have to vote. Otherwise, you get a fine.
Oh, yeah. I've met Australian people here, and they have to go to the embassy when they have an election to vote. Otherwise, they get a fine or something.
$200 fine or something. And it's mad, which is actually great. I have to be honest. It really is good in terms of...
Maybe.
I'd be terrible. I vote far less than I should. However...
Oh, I voted once in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, well, shouldn't admit that, should
no,
I?
No, you should not admit
I run
that,
a channel though. About politics. I voted once.
you overview the politics. I mean,
I don't want to be like one of these people, but it's like, I don't really... this election coming up.
Yeah.
Jeremy Corbyn, Boris Johnson, Labour, Conservative. I don't like any of these guys.
It's not a great mix.
No one else is going to make a difference.
I always think this is politics. How do we end up with always the worst two possible candidates?
It's pretty bad. It's not always been the case.
Well, you think about going back to the Trump election, everything like that. Yeah. Trump, Hillary Clinton,
both pretty bad.
Both pretty bad. There could have been 100 people that would have been better than they would. Yeah.
Michael Bloomberg is considering a run for president in 2020.
Ooh. So it's Dwayne The Rock Johnson, I heard, no?
Is he?
Yeah, apparently.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry.
I was just going to say, Michael Bloomberg's my political hero. He's an absolute legend. He's been on both sides of the fence, super centrist, business focused. He's also worth $30 billion. So, you know, his net worth is something 37 times that of Trump's. And I'm like,
oh,
that's
really?
Cool.
Yeah. Well done, Mr. Bloomberg.
Yeah, and he's just legit. And he's, you know, he was mayor of New York, so he's got political experience. Everyone loves him. He's great. Anyway, so, back to jury duty.
Yeah, have you done jury duty? You haven't? No,
but I looked into it. Oh, this was later on, but as we're talking about politics now... No, I'm going to save it for later because it's so good. if you get called up for jury duty... I was thinking, okay, what if I get called for jury duty? One, I live abroad, so I'm not really sure, how would they get my address? How would they... Surely there'd just be a letter that goes to, you know, wherever I was last...
Yeah.
Don't know.
Your last formal abode.
Yeah. But then do they get in touch with, the electoral people or the tax people or who? Or passport office?
Well, you know, this is our fun little fact of being English, is we have no proof that we exist.
Well, that's true.
You've probably
got no ID cards.
Exactly, no ID cards.
Americans don't have ID cards, do they?
I don't think so.
But everyone else in Europe has ID cards.
Everyone has ID cards, and everyone has a permanent address. And we don't have a permanent address in the UK.
it's so funny. I have bank accounts here, and before I became a permanent resident here and had a permanent address, they were like, where's your permanent address? And I'm like, what do you mean? I live here. And they're like, yeah, but that's not your permanent address. It's not in your ID. And I'm like, well, I don't have an ID. And they're like, okay, we need a permanent address. And I'm like, so I just gave my parents' address in the UK? It's like... Let's see. That's and they're exactly like, yeah, that'll work. Because it was on my British driver's license, which I don't even have anymore.
I'm exactly the same. Because everyone here, they're like, oh, you must have... I just got married. And that was a real problem for paperwork because I could not prove my permanent address. And I was going, I called everywhere. I called the banks. I called the embassy. I called everyone. And they were like, no, we don't have this in the UK. There is no such thing
as a permanent residence.
So... Yeah, there we just how do we get onto the permanent residence tangent?
Do you have your green book yet?
I'm temporary. From March, I should become permanent.
There you go. Then you'll get your permanent address, and you can swap everything out.
Exactly.
Okay, so I was thinking, what if I get called up for jury duty? It's unlikely. I have no idea how it would happen. Actually, I do because I know what happens because I looked it up. So, jury duty. Guess how much it pays you? Look, don't look at the screen. Have you looked at it?
I'm gonna say. £64 per day.
Oh my God, you got it exactly on.
Bang on the money. Yeah.
It is £64 a day. We have the notes open in front of us. I was hoping Sam hadn't read ahead, but he has. £64 a day. So I was thinking about this, and I'm like, that would be pretty, you know, I'd definitely make more than £64 a day.
Yes, so I was skipping a day.
Right, and this sounds pretty bad. So I was looking at the ways to get out of jury duty.
Hmm.
And what happens if you just, you know, don't show up? You get fined £1,000 if you don't reply to your jury duty notice, and you get fined £1,000 if you don't show up.
Wow.
And I'm like,
do I make 2,000 a day?
Well, it's not per day. It's just for not replying.
Ah.
And I'm like, jury duty can last, they say it takes about 10 days on average and 2 weeks total, £64 a day. I'll pay the fine. But I'm not sure if that just means, and I looked for this everywhere, and I looked to like lawyers' websites and everything. No one just seems to be okay with being like, yeah, I'll just pay the £1,000 and then just like move on with my life. If anyone who is listening to this is a lawyer and can work this out, what happens if you don't pay, if you just pay the fine? You're like, yeah, okay, I'll pay the fine. What happens next? They send you another fine?
The whole of society crumbles. They just go, like, they wouldn't know what to do. They go, no, you've got to come and do your jury. No, I'll pay the fine.
Yeah, because surely there are plenty of people, because you work out the maths on that. Okay, so you're going to get £64 a day, and you're going to get that's your opportunity. Your opportunity cost is your normal wage, minus £64 a day, and then minus £1,000 if you skip. And it's like, it works out. You don't often be making a ton of money for that to make economic sense. If you're talking 10 days work.
Yeah.
2 weeks work.
Yeah.
That's and that would cost you $1,000 plus 640, say, for the offset on the wages. So 1,640, that's only $3,000 a month. So if you're making more than £36,000 a year plus tax, let's say that, if your salary is over £50,000 a year, or you're making more than that from your business, kind of makes sense just to pay the fine on jury duty if it's a one-off fine. Right?
Yeah. Okay. And is it a one-off fine? It's a one-off fine.
I don't know. That's what I don't know. And I looked onto it. Right. So, and I want to know if anyone is a lawyer, this sort of lawyer in the UK, or can find out. I'd just love to know. I'm sure it'll be like, surely, now I think about it, and you think about it through, because everyone will just do this. If if you just wanted to continue work, you'd be like, sure, I'll just pay.
But I do think a £2,000 payout that's a significant payout for any family that has kids.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, okay, but there's always a 10% or a 1% of the population who will be in, and everyone's equally likely to get called up for jury duty, who's going to be like, no, I'll just pay. I'll pay.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Screw it. I'm not going. I'll pay the fine.
I suppose it depends how much you
I want to go to work and I don't want to sit on a jury.
Well, there you go. I suppose it depends how much you love your job, because like, I would find that quite interesting.
I would have found it more interesting when I was just employed in a job that I didn't care as much about.
Yeah.
And also when I made less money than £64 a day. isn't that minimum wage?
Because you see, I've always seen myself as a sort of a detective that never quite got into becoming a detective. So I think I would find that quite exciting.
Don't think, I've sat in court because I went to, you know, law school. It's boring.
Yeah.
And I went to interesting court.
Did you have to wear a wig?
Dude, no, I was in law school. I just sat in the observer's box. You don't even have to wear a suit.
You weren't a barrister.
No. No, far away from being a barrister. okay, so then I looked at other ways to get out of jury duty. If you've been in prison in the last 10 years, you're exempt. And I'm like, it's pretty good. So what if I get really drunk one night and like swear at a policeman? If I spend like that night in lockup, that's not prison.
No, that's arrested.
But that would be great. All I have to do is get arrested. And I don't care if I've been arrested. I'm self-employed.
don't need to be employed.
The last time I filled out one of those forms where it was like the criminal record check, it's like, have you been a criminal? Now it's like, I don't care. If I had to do jury duty or spend one night in jail.
Can't go to America. Can't go to New Zealand.
With a criminal record? Mm-hmm. Really?
Really. Really.
Wow.
Unless you're rich. In which case you can go anywhere.
How? You can pay, like,
yeah, you can pay to get in anywhere. Let's be honest. If you've got enough money and you flash the cash, then they're going to let you in, aren't they?
So definitely be a white collar criminal like Bernie Madoff.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's 10 years in prison. This is the gem.
Okay.
And this is why you can get called for jury duty in the UK and I cannot.
You just told me you voted.
What? Yeah, once, like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I was a student.
Just signed up.
I'm no longer on an electoral register.
I've just signed up now for the general election.
Right.
I've officially become a voter now.
And I bet because you're abroad, you're not going to get the jury duty letter to come back to the UK and be on a jury.
Hope so. Yeah.
But you have like a remote vote, or do you have to do it by post like another
person? I'm voting by proxy.
Okay.
So I'm putting the faith in someone else to go and cross the right box.
I'm betting the system is developed enough that you won't get called for jury duty here in Prague.
I really hope so.
So if you're just not on an electoral register, which I'm no longer on an electoral register, you can't get called. So that's fine. Just don't vote. And you don't have to do jury duty.
I'd like to know if there's something in place, like you used to be able to get out of World War II if you broke an ankle.
If you're having an operation, if you're doing some other stuff like that, or if you can't miss work for some important thing, you can delay it. But if you get summoned again, you can delay it. Sometimes it can be cancelled. But if you get a second summons, like to be jury again, No excuses.
You're an unlucky bugger.
Well, that would suck. Be like, oh yeah, I had my tonsils cut out. And the next one, it's like, yeah, well, you're getting your left lung cut out because of cancer. It's like, well, too bad.
Too bad.
You already skipped one because of an operation. Yeah, so I don't know. Like, I feel I tried digging into this a lot and finding out, especially the £1,000 thing. That super interested me. But I couldn't find out any details. If anyone knows, let us know in the comments. That's jury duty. My excuse for jury duty was the dude who was a judge on his own, a juror on his own case, which was excellent. This next one, this is, I don't know. I didn't make any notes about this. I just found it awesome.
I was going to say, I didn't actually see what this is. No. I left it because I loved what you called it.
Bear Lion Tiger, BLT.
BLT.
I saw this a couple of years ago and I just remembered how nice this is. Basically, these animals were put in a zoo. They were rescued from a drug dealer's house, and he had a bear, a lion, and a tiger, and they took them to a sanctuary when they were cubs. They put them all in the sanctuary together, and they lived happily ever after. You know, one of them died recently. But skip the text. This is just going to be a short segment. Oh, how awesome is that?
That's lovely.
We're looking at a tiger, a bear, and a lion, all just like rubbing heads against each other, like these friendly animals. And apparently, like, when they animals can like this can be friends as cubs and stuff, but when they get older, you know, the tiger will destroy the bear or something.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know what happens. Well, but
that would be a death match. That'd be a good thing to see.
I wouldn't watch that because it supports animal cruelty.
I wouldn't watch like an organized match, but if it happened in the wild, then God, that would be thrilling.
I don't know why I instantly jumped to it being an organized match,
like sat in an amphitheater, watching a bear and tiger.
I just thought this was really nice and kind of cute. Just a little feel good segment.
Have you seen? I think he's an Argentinian guy who has all of the big cats and everything, and he gets them as cubs and he rears. I think it's in Argentina. It could be Mexico.
Well, I mean, like in his house or in his zoo?
In his house. He's got them. He's got like a massive ranch sort of thing, and they just roam around. And he just kisses them and hugs them and plays with them and all sorts. And there's one video where you can see a leopard in the background. It's sort of starting to run at him, and all of a sudden, a tiger comes out of nowhere, knocks the leopard flying.
Oh, I think I've seen this.
And then he's Spanish speaker, so you can hear him just go, "Oh, gracias, pesitas," and he's like, "Oh, they're like, thank you for saving me," basically.
Christ,
it's incredible. Like, they all protect them, look after him.
But we recently made a video about like how easy it is to buy a tiger. Like, because, you know, you rich people buy tigers or whatever. Turns out super easy in America.
Wow.
And a little bit more complicated in the UK and elsewhere. But it's dangerous because you can rear that tiger from being a cub.
Mm.
And, you know, you think, oh, you know, it loves you all of the time. It's like super nice and all of this stuff. But apparently there's like this part of them which never goes away.
Yeah.
This like predatory, just sometimes they can just lose it and they'll kill you. Mm. And there's tons of examples of people's pet tigers, like their whole life, grown up with them, decades of like love and care, and then one day the tiger just destroys them.
Just goes bang.
Goes absolutely, yeah. Just like, I've had enough. I'm going to destroy you. And that's it.
That's mad.
Yeah.
It's a big old strong animal, isn't it? The tiger.
Tiger versus human.
Like, dude. It's okay. I've just got a kitten. All right, and about
if that kitten was as big as a tiger, it would destroy you.
Oh, no, 100%. But like, you watch a cat playing like with like a play mouse or something like that, or when it's or like you've got the stick with the little what do you call it, the ribbons at the end.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And it'll chase you, and then when it goes in for the kill, it really kills. Like, and even like dogs as well. You think if you watch a dog like play fight with a person or something.
Yeah.
You don't stand a chance. Their agility is just so much more than ours.
I feel with dogs, it's less intense. Like, they're obviously bigger animals and, you know, have teeth and, you know, like not like cats. But I feel cats and tigers and stuff, they're like alpha predators.
Yeah.
Like, just no messing around.
Nah, it's they can afford to play with their food because they can just catch it again.
Yeah.
You know, I saw an amazing thing. All right, so my brother's girlfriend is really big into cats, loves cats.
I like cats.
We were at a barbecue, a family barbecue, and a cat came in with a mouse in its mouth. And, you know, obviously he hadn't killed it. He wanted to show us that it caught a mouse, play with it, and then eat it. And she jumped up straight away, saw it, was like, oh, poor thing, and ran over, went to the cat, drop it now.
Mm.
The cat dropped the mouse, which started running around inside the house. She jumped on it, caught it in her bare hands and took the mouse outside and released it, and then came over and went, that's a bit gross, I should probably wash my hands.
You should definitely wash your hands. I would worry about like the mouse biting me and stuff. I once got bitten by a hamster and it was unpleasant. They're very sharp teeth.
Me too. Straight through to the bone.
Really? Not nice.
Yeah.
Now I don't like small little vermin animals. But there we go. So that's Bear, Lion, Tiger. I just like this one.
BLT. Also just a great sandwich.
Scroll down. Let's look at some more pictures before we move pictures. On. Oh, yeah, dude. Okay. They're so nice. Look at this. This is them as like a cub.
A Simba.
Yeah, super nice.
That's lovely. Little cub.
Here they are in the drug dealer's house. Oh, no, maybe the... No, this is later.
Tiberli. That's a tiger, lion, a bear and a lion.
It's very nice.
Look at that. Oh, they got a big ball and everything. Well, let's hope that this tiger doesn't go all alpha one day and just...
Just destroy the bear.
I mean, I wonder... Lion versus tiger. Probably tiger.
I reckon tiger.
They're bigger.
Stronger. They're bigger. Yeah. Didn't we discuss tiger size at length?
I think we did ligers.
Was that in our unaired pilot? No, I think that was one that will have gone out by now. Anyway, that's bear, lion, tiger.
Anyway, BLT.
Let's talk about something else. Complete change of subject. Mm-hmm. Using Bluetooth scanners to break into cars. Open up that link that I put there.
Yeah.
This one's really interesting. So I don't know about you, but ever since I was, you know, first rode in cars or had my own car, if I wanted to, you know, leave my laptop or backpack or wallet or phone in the car, there were like classic places I put it. You know, if you got the backpack with the laptop in it, put it in the boot.
Yeah.
And make sure the parcel shelf is there. So at least, you know, no one can see it. Put your phone in the glove box, put your wallet under the seat or, you know, this kind of stuff. The thieves have got so smart to this because people were wondering like, people said, I hid my laptop in the boot and then there was other stuff in the car, like my wallet was in the glove box and stuff like this or whatnot. And the thief had just broken into the boot, just taken the laptop or like just taken a phone from under a seat or this kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out they're using Bluetooth scanners. Nice. So you can get this app on your phone and it will just, you know, sniff for local Bluetooth devices. No. Like, you know, when you're on a tram or anywhere and you open it up and you see the available Bluetooth devices.
Yeah.
And then you connect to your headphones or whatever. I often find it on planes because you're in close proximity with a lot of other people who also have their phones.
Yeah.
And you see all of these Bluetooth devices. What the thieves are doing is they get a device that basically gives more information on that. So it'll tell the strength of signal and stuff. They'll go around to people's cars. They'll be like, oh, okay, I see a device is in here.
Something here.
And it's like, okay, cool. I can't see it, but I know it's in there. So they'll break in, they'll dig around, they'll find the phone, and that's it. And I was just thinking, like, there's definitely going to... I was thinking, okay, so, you know, all of this stuff, like Simon's MacBook Pro, Simon's iPad, all of this stuff. I think I'm just going to rename all of my devices to be like Simon's shitty Acer from 2013. You know, like, just name them as, like, really low-value devices so people don't want to steal them. Or, like... Simon's Windows phone.
Simon's iPod Touch.
Yeah, exactly. I have an iPod Touch.
Yeah.
I use it as a teleprompter on that on that device over there.
Oh, very good.
Because I kept using my regular iPhone and you'd get the whenever I forgot to on the mic. Forgot to turn it onto airplane mode.
Uh-huh.
So I bought an iPod Touch.
Nice.
I didn't even realize you could still buy iPod Touches.
No, I'm not sure you can.
So I didn't buy it from an official store. I bought it used.
Aha. Uh-huh.
But it's fairly new. It looks like an iPhone 5, I think. So,
well, this is the thing. iPhones haven't... I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this. I don't think iPhones have really changed in the last 5 evolutions of the iPhone. Like, they've put, like, screen... Face ID and stuff like that on.
Yeah.
But in terms of the actual, like, basis of the iPhone, it's stayed the same pretty much since the 4 or 5 is.
I liked it when they made it the screen. Like, I thought this, what they did with the screen on this 10 when they brought out the 10 was pretty good.
Oh, I don't like it without a button. I need a button.
It's you get used to it.
I don't want to get used to it. I like a button.
Yeah, that's true. Button's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm arguing. I completely agree with you. But where do you go from here? I mean, the flip ones, they look a bit crappy. Well,
I think it's going to start moving into the body. I think people are going to have phones put into their hands. I think we're going to have like little implants in our ears. I'm not going to. I can tell you that much.
You won't?
Do you know, I'm the kind of person that I will.
Total Luddite.
I will keep up with technology, but I will not partake in it. So I will know what's going on,
mm-hmm.
but no one's going to ever know exactly where I am when I'm there.
This podcast works, right?
This is not in my head.
Radio.
This is old technology.
We're going to press this onto a vinyl.
Oh, that would be fantastic. And
there's a podcast I listen to called Hello Internet. Do you know this?
I know the name.
An American guy and an Australian guy. And they pressed a vinyl of one of their episodes as like a reward for like their patrons or whatever. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty
Vinyl's
great.
Definitely coming back.
Dude, I feel like vinyl's been back for a long time.
Black
hipsters.
Gold. They call it black gold.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you have sort of original press vinyls, they can be worth a fortune.
Wow.
And
I feel like my parents have tons of these in the attic. I should be like, get up there.
Get up there, check what you got.
Dig out those old Beatles albums.
Yeah. No, I mean, you never know what people have got. Like this, I mean, I think it's something that this generation doesn't have, actually. Like the younger generation, even like our age, there was go to the CD shop, go through the CDs, actually pick what you want to listen to.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's all just
dude, it's all there
on Spotify.
And Spotify tells you what you want to listen to.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's amazing. It's legit. Like that Discover Weekly regularly blows my mind with the stuff that they select for me.
This is great.
It's extraordinary. I feel, yeah.
But I think it's a shame. Yeah. Like when you watch old movies and stuff where people, and like even Blockbuster stores and things like that, like go through and pick your movie. Like,
dude, yeah.
We Netflix now. Okay. You don't have to leave the house. It's not an event.
I feel this is a problem. I don't know if this is an issue for you, but I struggle with choice. So we have too much choice. So last night I got into a little argument with my wife because we were ordered off Uber Eats. And I'm like, I don't really want to, you know. She's like, oh, I found this thing. And I'm like, oh, I don't really know if I feel like that. But if you're in a restaurant, you're just like, okay, great. There's like 10 things on the menu. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. But on Uber Eats, you're like, there's an infinite choice. And I was like, oh, you know, I don't really want that. And she's like, well, what do you want? It's like, I don't know. And so I'm looking through and I'm just getting annoyed because I'm like, I don't know what I want because there's a million choices.
Yep.
We never fight about food any other time. And I'm like, this is really unpleasant.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, I'll just have what you're having.
And then takeaway.
But then she was like, but then I don't know if you'll like it and you'll be angry with me. And I'd be like, I won't. I'll just take that.
I've made my choice.
Yeah. Or what we ended up with was she chose the restaurant. Nice. And then I chose something for, you know, the takeaway restaurant, wherever it was coming from.
What did you go for? What cuisine?
Dude, I didn't even know. It was weird. It was like roasted chicken with kimchi and rice and some sort of weird pepper salad thing.
Oh, wow.
And it was half hot, half cold. It was pretty tasty. And it was a big portion for like 200 crowns. I was pretty pleased.
Sounds Korean-esque.
It felt a bit Korean because of the kimchi. And maybe it was Korean. It tasted pretty good. I was pretty satisfied.
Great.
But that choice thing drives me insane.
Yeah.
I have it with Netflix as well. Mm-hmm. When I'm at home alone, if my wife's not there, I'll really struggle to find something. And I'll be like flicking around on different things. When I'm watching with my wife, it's like, well, I don't, you know, I'm not going to channel hop so much. We'll just choose something and then we'll watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I need a video store and I need a really limited choice of restaurants to keep me, to make me happier. I'm much more happy when I don't have this insane choice. And then you're like, I can get anything I want. I can get any type of food for a few equivalent of pounds delivered to my door. And then I can watch a movie in 4K from hundreds of movie choices for what? 400 crowns a month? $10, $20 a month?
I get lost in the foreign films of Netflix. I love that.
Oh, I just write that all off because I'm like, I'm not going to read the subtitles.
Oh, I disappear into that. I absolutely disappear into
it. I'm horribly uncultured.
I find myself watching like a really terrible like Korean violent action movie. I'm like, oh, this is it.
And you'll watch it through?
I'll watch like 40 minutes and then I'll go, nah, this wasn't worth my time. But
just to go even deeper into this tangent, I watched... I discovered my wife has never seen Back to the Future.
What? No.
I know. I was like, what is this? And she's like, yeah, I just never saw it. And I'm like, we're watching that.
Yeah.
So we watched it last night. Incredible movie.
It's a great movie.
If we weren't finishing this podcast so late tonight, we'd be watching Back to the Future too. That's tomorrow.
Ah.
Anyway, we were talking about people stealing things from cars using Bluetooth. And then we went off in the fucking woods.
I'm sure you can share Netflix via Bluetooth. So
yeah, that's right.
There you go.
That's the link.
That's our link back.
So basically, there was a really nice quote here from this article. What they had this interview with this guy who's like a security expert, and I'm like, okay, so he's an ex-thief, and he was basically saying, well, like, who's a security expert about car about thespian cars? I like, this is definitely you're a criminal. You used to be a criminal, and then you went straight, or maybe straight. And all he was saying was like, yeah, this is all well and good, but really, what criminals do is they'll just be hiding in the shadows. They'll watch people park up. They'll see where they'll put their stuff. And then they'll just go, you know, if you move your laptop bag to the boot of your car, they're like, cool, there's something valuable in that bag. Because they watched you do it, and then they just break in really super fast, and then they're off.
You know, it's done. A skill I'd love to learn, how to break into a car and hotwire a car.
I don't know how to hotwire it. I saw a man from the... Because I locked my keys in my car once, and the man from the AA came and got it out in about a minute.
Coat hook job.
No. He uses this little tool, and this, to be fair, I probably wouldn't work in a modern car. He uses this tool which sort of pries away. So if you've got your car door, yeah, and you've got the window at the top, and there's the frame surrounding the window, he'll pry away just really a little the top of the door frame, well, from like the
rubber bit.
Yeah, but the whole kind of door bends a little bit. So he kind of pulls the whole thing away just with this little wedge thing, which he taps in. And it's like this thing, this big, centimeter big.
Yeah.
And then he'll drop this like wire device in, which has a hook on the end or some sort of grabbing thing. And then he grabs the door popper, you know, the thing that pops up on old cars. Like, this was my first car from like 1996 or something.
Love that.
And not that it was made in 1996. I'm not that old. Yeah. And so he lowers it in and he grabs the thing and he pops it up and then he opens the door. And then he pushes the frame of the door, like bends it back into place. Job done. Yeah, anyway, this article, the quote I liked, was that they refer to this type of stealing now as the analog technique. I was like, that's really good.
Lovely.
Yeah. Oh, I also thought that this could be the plot of the most boring tech heist movie ever.
We're going to use the analog technique today.
Yeah, just regular
Ocean's
or the Bluetooth stealing of devices. It'd be like a really dull Ocean's.
This was Ocean
17.
6.
Yeah,
we've gone back in time.
Ocean's 1, just one dude stealing Bluetooth devices. Do you want to talk about the Hindenburg?
Yeah, well, I like the Hindenburg.
You do?
Yeah,
because of the death toll, or
no.
Why do you like? I'll
tell
the Hindenburg?
You why I like the Hindenburg. I read a book when I was 12.
Yeah.
Wasn't particularly informational. It was a fiction.
Okay.
It was a fiction called the Pendragon series.
Okay.
It was lovely. I think the reason I wanted to go traveling was the Pendragon series. They were really good books. It was about a kid who could disappear into a different realm and everything like that. And basically, one of the realms was New York in the olden days.
Okay.
And it was based around the Hindenburg disaster. And so I got really into the Hindenburg and I started like researching the Hindenburg and everything like that. So... Luftzeppelin 179, I want to say.
Oh, the like official name of the Hindenburg.
Number of the Hindenburg.
I don't know, bring up that Time article. The reason this is on the agenda today is just recently I found out, or I got into this. This is how I got turned onto this story. The last survivor of the Hindenburg disaster just died.
Wow.
I was like, I felt like the Hindenburg was like 100 years ago, but it wasn't. It was like the 1930s because it was Nazi Germany. Which I didn't put together, but then I remembered and you're like, oh. But you know, the footage and stuff, it's like super grainy and old and black and white. And
it's incredible to see. You know, I'm slightly devastated.
I got a link to the video if you want to bring that up as well.
Yeah.
Where you mean see, like see the...
I'm slightly devastated that... that airships are not a thing anymore.
Okay.
I understand from a safety point of view.
Rain again.
Here we go, we're just watching the footage. So there was a big blimp coming in to New Jersey.
Just don't turn that down because I know it's a little loud for us, but I want it to be clear on the audio.
Okay.
Just there, that's perfect. Get out of the way, please. It's running, bursting into flames, and so it's
burned into just a massive ball of flame. And what's incredible with these airships, and this is why I think it's devastating that we don't have them anymore, is they are colossal. They are humongous. I mean, look at that. They're just pure.
I don't think you get a good idea of the scale of that thing. I've got a little diagram later which will clear it up, but just It is enormous.
It's phenomenal to see, but actually way more people survived than you would have thought.
Dude, this is what this is all about. This is what I want to talk about. Because, so this guy, he was 8 years old when he survived the crash of the Hindenburg.
Okay.
And he was just thrown out of it. Because this is, well, this is how people survived.
Out you go, son.
Literally, it was his mum that threw him out. And because the Hindenburg's up and it's coming down as it's catching on fire, the hydrogen's all going first, mm-hmm. and it's coming down and people are still alive. You know, it's not blown up essentially. It's caught fire.
No, burning. Yeah.
And as that thing's coming down, people just start jumping out of it and running.
Well, I suppose because also the bit where people were sat kind of came down to the ground. Like yes. as it burned, it kind of the back end flipped down to the ground. So they wouldn't have been that high. They would have been high, but
they would have been high. They got injured. They got severe burns. 2/3 of the people survived.
That's amazing.
When you look at that, go back to that video.
Sorry, I closed the video. Hang on.
It's insane.
Like, yeah, it's proper firepower. Like, that's... I understand why after the Hindenburg disaster, they stopped using airships.
Skip ahead to really where it's burning.
Burn.
It's further. Like, that's insane. It takes...
Like 30 seconds, I think, is the whole burn.
How do you survive that?
Well, because it was all above them.
I know, but it's incredible.
It is incredible. It's like, I don't know, cooking something under a fire. Like, it's not going to happen. Heat rises. But I understand. Christ. I understand why, with this disaster, airships are not a thing. I get that. However... they must have just been incredible to see when you just saw like an airship coming over. It would have literally blocked out the sun. Like, it's a shame we don't see it anymore.
It's wild. And also, I was talking about this on my other podcast, actually. I would like to see, you know, people are like, oh, planes are great because it gets you from A to B really quickly. Mm-hmm. But people also take cruises where, you know, you can go on a long cruise and it's kind of nice and chilled out and all of this stuff. And I'm like, I think that could be airships, like airship cruises. So there's a giant airship, you got like a cabin. Yeah, it takes like a week to get there or whatever, but it's super nice. And you eat in this nice restaurants and all this stuff. It's more just like taking a cruise in the sky.
Well, I think you can do those. I think that...
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I looked up like airship leisure travel and stuff, and it's just like really short tours and stuff. There's no big airship operators which are operating air cruise line.
Well, I think after the Hindenburg disaster, they just went completely out of commission. Like, they just sort of... Like, it was such a public... It's similar what's the aeroplane? Concorde. It was such like a public...
Yeah.
The Air France crash, but like the Hindenburg disaster became the face of airships, and it's a real shame. I think they're beautiful. They're super amazing cool. to look at,
and you can fill them with helium. I mean, exactly, helium's like, a bit of a rare resource, but it is.
We can just siphon it out of people's balloons.
Well, no joke, helium is only cheap for balloons. At least
it's not that cheap. My mum used to run a balloon company. It's not
really
that cheap. Yeah.
What?
That's a blast from the 90s, isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe this is what I'm thinking. Maybe it's only cheap in America because they subsidize it because they have a giant store of it. But helium's, you don't make it. It's found like underground or something.
Yeah. I think isn't the 7% helium the atmosphere or something? It's quite a rare resource. But
so your mum ran a balloon shop.
Yeah, back in the 90s when balloons used to be a big thing.
Thought balloons are still a big thing.
They're not.
No?
They're not. No one has a balloon anymore.
I just went to my mum's 60th birthday party last weekend.
Fantastic.
They weren't helium balloons. They're just regular balloons.
Happy birthday to your mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. But balloons used to, if you think about it, weddings, everyone used to have balloons. So people used to do balloon arches and they'll do big bride and grooms made out of balloons and things like that. You don't see that anymore. No. That doesn't happen anymore.
I feel that would be a bit tacky.
Yeah, exactly. Tacky. And it kind of has gone with the times. Like, it's no longer a thing, which is a shame. I liked it. But helium wasn't cheap. It was the one sort of resource that you really had to pay for.
Yeah, and hydrogen's a lot easier to come by.
Mm.
Problem with hydrogen...
it explodes.
Really super flammable. You know what's fun? You think with this, yeah, people just didn't know. And it's like, well, yeah, they did.
They did.
They definitely knew. The reason the engineer, the guy who designed the Hindenburg, wanted to use helium. But the US at the time had a global monopoly on helium. All of the world's helium came from the US. Wow. And essentially, they were like, no, we're not going to give you helium because you might use it for military uses, which, to be fair, fair point.
Probably would have.
Nazi Germany, after all. And so the guy didn't get to use helium in the Hindenburg.
God,
and so it blew up and killed all those people.
Do you know why it blew up? Was it static in the clouds or something?
Oh.
I think it was static. I think it was static electricity and it sparked.
Yes, I think a static buildup on the ship itself.
Yeah, of it running it through the clouds and it kind of rubbed across the I don't know.
Gosh, I feel like we should know that. Is that known? I don't know. I don't think this article said. Anyway.
I'm just going to do a quick little lookup. When I find the answer, I'll let you know.
I've also got a couple of interesting other things about the Hindenburg.
Go for it.
Are you going to look that up?
I'm looking up that.
Okay, yeah. I'll talk about the fact that the Hindenburg had a smoking lounge. It is the 1930s, so people were really into their smoking. And especially, I can imagine, you know, the modern day price of tickets on this thing was like $7,000 American. So it's not really cheap. That's and I can lot. Just imagine, you know, those men on there, they want to retire to the smoking lounge and have a pipe or a cigar or something like that. So they needed to work out a way to make it happen. But it just seems insane when it is, there is a huge bubble of hydrogen above you. So they were smoking and all of this stuff, and they got it done by, there was a guard, so you wouldn't be able to leave the smoking area with a lit anything. There was one single electrical lighter to light your cigar or whatever, and they had a negative pressure room. So they kept the pressure, it was like an airlock to get in, and then the pressure in, it was slightly less pressurized inside, so everything would always come in. Leakage of any embers or anything out that could potentially ignite it.
Do you know, I do think we live in an amazingly technological age.
Oh, it's all hypotheses, so they don't actually know.
Well, they said here, Hugh Heckner argued that the fire was started by an electrical spark, which was caused by a buildup of static electricity on the airship.
Oh, there
the
you go.
The spark ignited well done. Hydrogen on the outer skin. So there you go. But that's the hypothesis. Mm-hmm. So we will never know. We will never know. But what I wanted to say is that we live in like a technological age where everything's smart and clever. But if you look back at old things that like people did in the olden days to get around a problem, some of them were genius. Like that for example, that is a genius.
Yeah, like the negative pressure room.
That's
pretty solid.
Incredible.
Yeah.
They're probably
pretty motivated.
I mean, however they created Stonehenge, however they did all these sorts of things, people came across some incredible methods of doing things because they had to. And I love that.
It's pretty good. Go back to the documents and open up that last link for this section, because you wanted an idea of how big the Hindenburg was.
Yeah. Here we go.
I really wanted to see what it was like inside. Like, what was it, you know, was there a dining area and all this stuff?
Inside of the living area?
Yeah. There's some cool pictures, but this is even better. Just scroll down.
It's a big boy.
Oh God, have we got to accept some cookies or something?
We have to accept something.
Oh, you're okay. Okay. Just go all the way. Go down.
Oh my God.
Cool, right?
Look at that. Isn't that amazing?
It's pretty incredible. We're looking at pictures of the Hindenburg right over, flying over New York City. Okay, so there it is. The Zeppelin, the Hindenburg. And zoom in on that. So yeah, there's the size of it. And you can see... we're just looking at a big cutaway of the entire Zeppelin, and then there's a blow up of the living part of the Zeppelin. So you can see all the cabins and stuff and the dining area and the smoking room and all of that stuff. And then that all of that living area makes up just a small part of the bottom of the airship. But it's pretty cool.
That's incredible. That's amazing. Like, that's colossal.
Cruising in the sky, man.
And
let's bring this back.
We can see next to it there is a little aeroplane which does not make up 1/1000th of the size of that. What do you think?
Say 200th.
200. Sorry.
That's a five-fold difference right there. It's not, I don't think it's 1,000 times bigger than a plane.
No, well, that was a little
plane. Say it's 100 times bigger, maybe. It's a little plane.
I suppose it depends. Is it big and far away, or is it?
I don't know.
Really,
I don't know if that. They don't say it's for scale or anything, so I wouldn't assume it is. But they do advertise it as a flying hotel. I think I'd like to see that. I'd like the flying hotel to come back. Absolutely. Hindenburg, man.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, burned.
Absolutely.
And so I guess we have to wave goodbye to the last survivor.
Do you wanna wrap up today's episode? Not now, but do you wanna wrap it up with one of your stories?
With one of my facts. Yeah, I would like to actually. So today I wanted to talk about Romans and how they used a birth control herb so much that it went extinct.
I think I did a video about this once, so I'll actually be halfway informed.
Of course you did a video.
Yeah, yeah,
you've done
true.
A video on everything.
Well, I'm amazed the amount of stuff I haven't done videos on.
Well,
anyway.
I was going to say, I'm amazed you ever find stuff that you've... I kind of go through...
How do I not know about this?
When I'm looking at stuff for this podcast, I go through and I go, no, he's done a video.
You don't have to do that. We can recover stuff like this. Tell me about this herb.
All right, so... Silphium.
Sure.
Silphium once grew rampant in the Greek city of Cyrene, now Libya, on the northern coast of Africa. The ancient physician Soranos suggested taking a monthly dose of silphium the size of a chickpea to prevent pregnancy and destroy any existing pregnancies that might be happening. The plant acted...
Conservatives would have an American conservatives. Would have, it's an abortion pill.
It's an abortion pill. Let's be completely straight with that. It was an abortion pill / contraception. So the plant acted as an abortificient. Well, that's a word I've never heard of. As well as a preventative measure. Oh, an abortificient.
Abortificient, maybe.
Okay, I'm glad you can't say that.
I'm not sure.
As well as a preventative measure.
You should be able to pronounce that word.
A single dose of the resin from the plant would induce menstruation, effectively rendering the woman temporarily infertile. If the woman was already pregnant, the induced menstruation would lead to a miscarriage. The Cyrenians tried to balance the harvests. However, the plant eventually was harvested to extinction by the end of the 1st century AD. The last stalk of silphium was reportedly harvested and given to the Roman Emperor Nero as an oddity, who, I haven't got this written here, but who didn't know what it was, and so he ate it.
Oh, no. Oh, he should have planted that.
No, definitely should have planted that and kept it going.
And they haven't... I remember from the one I did... the video, they still haven't discovered anything like this. Like, this was, there's not plants that are similar to this that have any similar effects. The Romans just literally used it to extinction, and that was it.
It's incredible, isn't that? The idea of, and like, we've done it in our lifetimes and things like that, of just taking something that exists and using it so much that it's then gone.
Yeah, I feel like we're really working on that pretty hard as a species. Fish. For one.
Oh, fish.
God. Fish.
Yellowfin tuna.
It's kind of just going away.
Do you know, one of the last tuna in the world has already been bought.
Really?
Yeah, there was a Japanese millionaire has already bought the last, I think, yellowfin tuna, I think it is.
How?
I don't know. But there was a big, I'm not sure of the exact details of this, but it was on the documentary At the End of the Line. And they've already got a monopoly on the fish, so I'm not sure exactly the details of it, but maybe it was a particular type of tuna or something like that, but there was a big one type of tuna has either gone extinct or they've sold the final one of that particular type of tuna.
I can't believe that's
a thing.
Yeah,
I'm gonna buy that one.
You bought the last one of an extinct species and you're gonna eat it.
You're gonna eat it, that's it.
Fair enough. I mean, where was that? Japan? China?
Japan. Yeah.
Oh my. So is that silphium?
That's silphium. Would you use silphium if it was available? Would you have used it?
Well, it sounds like it wouldn't do anything to me. It would be a woman's choice.
I suppose. You know, women have had a bad time with this, haven't they? Did you hear about they've recently developed the male
contraception? They've been talking about male contraception like this for 20 years.
Well, apparently, okay, I've got a friend that works in the pills industry, like develops.
So he's a drug dealer.
No, fine. Pharmacist. So she's a pharmacist. She helps to develop pills. And
She's a pharmacist or she helps develop pills?
She's a pharmacist that works on the development of pills. Like, not as in the pharmacist that counts things together, but the pharmacist that actually makes the pills.
Ah, isn't that a different name? Like a pharmacologist?
Could be a pharmacologist.
I'm not sure. I'm just talking
I apologize
about
to all pharmacologists out there who are offended.
Maybe pharmacists do this as well. I'm
not sure. I'm honestly not sure of the naming
I'm
convention.
Sorry. Tell me more.
But it is said, and I'm not sure exactly how true this is, but it is said that there have been many attempts at a contraceptive pill or a contraceptive a contraceptive for men, but men complain so much about the side effects of being. I get
of course
mood
we do.
Swings.
We're men. Yeah.
Exactly. I get mood swings. I get pain. I get. I'm tired. I'm this, and they've been deemed too sort of intense to bring into circulation. However, women's contraceptions have been doing this for years.
Yes. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it?
But yeah. No. I just read about it the other day. There's a contraceptive injection which is going to be put into a tube attached to... like with sperm attached to the testicles, and
what? Hang on, I'm okay with an injection, like jab me in my arm, or you know, worst case, my butt. I'm not really comfortable with someone injecting my balls.
This goes right into the balls, right into the ball sack.
But it also sounds like it's not just an injection. It sounds like you're setting up some sort of catheter.
No.
Like you were like, it goes in there, and like, do I have to wear this as some sort of permanent device?
No. It's an injection. So, my understanding is that it basically kills off the sperm.
Yeah.
I think I might be wrong here. Okay. I think it kills off the sperm, and it lasts 16 years. So you have to be quite serious if you're going to go ahead with this.
Well, like with a vasectomy as well.
Vasectomy.
It's a very serious decision.
Don't want to cut off the balls.
What, they're not going to cut off your balls with a vasectomy?
Vasectomy.
Dude, you know what a vasectomy is. You do. You're having me on, right?
Yeah.
It's not castration.
I've been watching a lot of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. We're not going to let you cut your balls off. You do know how that works.
Wait, was that Jake Teteri?
Jake Teteri.
Yeah. Oh, man, Brooklyn Nine-Nine is so solid. Cool. Let's wrap it up. This has been the Simon Whistler Show. Joined as always, Sam Myers. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Simon Whistler. Sam is at This Is Sam Myers, MEYERS.
You got it. This is Sam Myers, MEYERS.
You got it.
It's not actually This Is Sam Myers, MEYERS. This Is Sam Myers, MEYERS is how you spell my name.
And now Simon, I'm more confused. I think Simon I got Whistler. It before. I'm easy at Simon Whistler. No one had taken it. I only joined Twitter like... 2 years ago. This is the Simon Whistler Show. Thank you everybody for listening. Rate, review, subscribe, like, leave a comment, depending on how you're consuming this content. It makes a difference. It lets us know that we're not, well, I won't say we're good, but it lets us know we're not terrible. Unless you dislike everything, then it just sends the signal that we're bad and we'll stop. But hopefully you enjoy this show. You made it to the end.
Don't thumbs down us, please. That would be disheartening.
Yeah. It hurts.
A lot of effort goes into preparing this show.
Every thumbs down hurts my soul. So just think about that when you thumbs down it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back real soon with another episode.
See you later, folks.